Hello and welcome to ESL Etc. My name is Dave. Please check out the website at eseletc.com. You can email me at eseletc@gmail.com. At the website, I've got a bunch of materials. Some of them are kind of general content-based ESL or EFL activities, and others are more focused on bringing global issues or activism into the classroom. There's also recently added forums at the website, and on that topic, I want to thank Mark, who's one of the co-hosts of the podcast ESL Teacher Talk, and he also has a really nice website, mesenglish.com. He suggested some modifications that I could make to the forum to stop spam and other advertisements from creeping in, and I really appreciate that. And in the process of doing that, I came across a couple of other mods that I wanted to make, including one that I hope will be useful. I put it in last night. Basically, now you can put attachments in your forum messages. And what I'm hoping is that people can tell us about an activity or a lesson plan that they made and then attach the worksheets. Yeah, if there's any other suggestions that anyone has for the forums or for the website, I'd love to hear about it. I've also got links to a lot of other resources, and I'm going to talk about some of those resources today. Before I do, though, I'd like to talk about an activity that Kira did with her class this week, which relates to what I was talking about in last week's podcast. Both of us have found a lot of plagiarism in the student work that we've been collecting. We're doing a project where students are coming up with a script that they're going to perform for their final project. And in all of our classes, we found a significant percentage of scripts that were just copied off the internet. She came up with an activity to kind of show students why this isn't a good way to learn English. I don't want to put words in her mouth, but for me, the problem with plagiarism, it's not so much the ethical side, you know, is it stealing, is it wrong? I don't care so much about that, but it's bad for learning English. You learn more English if you use the English, and it's much better to summarize something than to copy that thing, just for language learning. And certainly, when I tell my students, you know, don't copy something, don't plagiarize, this is the reason that I give them, and I also tell them, you know, it's totally okay to take words and even phrases from something. That's how you learn a language. It's good to do that, but don't take whole sentences and don't take certainly don't take paragraphs or pages, as students sometimes do. So Kira came up with an activity that's designed to kind of show students this, and I think it's really great. I have to admit I was kind of skeptical when she told me about this. I didn't think it would work, and she hasn't done it in all of her classes, but in the classes that she has done it, it has worked, which is really great. And I'm planning to do a similar thing next semester at the beginning of the class. But what she did, and I apologize if I get the details wrong, but you'll get the gist of it. She split the class into two groups, and each group had a couple of students that were representing that group. And she wrote a paragraph on the board, and the students that were selected as the representatives, they were assigned either to summarize the meaning of the paragraph to the students that they were representing, or to memorize the paragraph and pass on the exact words of the paragraph to the students that they were representing. She gave them about 10 minutes to do this, and afterwards, students were quizzed with a series of comprehension questions. And in all of the classes, the students that summarized it did a lot better on the comprehension questions. Some classes, the divide was more clear than others, but I think in all of the classes, there was at least a slight advantage to the summarizing students. Another variation of this that could work is having students, having a written assignment where students are summarizing a paragraph in their own words, half of the class, and then the other half of the class is simply copying the paragraph, and then same thing, have some comprehension questions. The nice thing about doing this is students can see for themselves that copying doesn't work, that memorizing things or copying things doesn't help you learn a language nearly as much as, you know, taking in the information and restating it in your own words. For any teachers that are struggling with plagiarism, an activity like this might help, and I'm certainly going to try to bring it into my own teaching in the future. So I hope that's useful, and feel free, if you try it, I'd love to hear about your experiences with it, or if you have any other ways of dealing with plagiarism, you could share those in the forums too. This week, I'd like to highlight a couple of really useful groups that are located online. And I'd also like to talk about a couple of sites that I came across that are kind of interesting and might be useful or of interest to teachers. They're all kind of global issues in focus. First of all, I'd like to talk about a couple of the professional organizations that are out there for ESL and EFL teachers who are interested in bringing global issues or social justice issues into their teaching. I'll provide links to all of these in the show notes on the website, so please check that out if you're interested in joining any of these. The first organization that I want to talk about is TESOL. That's TESOL. So TESOL is Teachers of English to Speakers of Other Languages. Their website is tesol.org. You have to enter www before that, which is strange, but their website will give you an error if you don't do that. And as far as the link to the specific global issues materials, it's probably easier if you just come to my website, eseletc.com, because they have a couple of different places where they have, or where they say they have, global issues materials. Some you need a password for, some you don't. And the best one, it's a little bit complicated to get there. But I'll link to it directly. I mention them first because, at least from my American perspective, they're the most well-known ESL teachers or EFL teachers organization. But it is kind of American in focus, and to be honest, in terms of having free resources available, it's probably the least interesting of the organizations that I'm going to mention. There are some resources available on their website, but most of those are only accessible with a paid membership, which is kind of expensive. They have a caucus called TESOLers for Social Responsibility. This group has a website. They don't have a lot of their own materials or articles up on that website, at least not that I've seen, but they have a pretty nice collection of links to resources online that give information about various global issues. And as I said, I'll link to that directly in the show notes. Unfortunately, their newsletter is not available from that website. To get their newsletter, you have to be a TESOL member, which I am, but probably won't be for much longer. TESOL membership is too expensive with a Chinese salary. But if you are a TESOL member, you can log into their website and you can get past issues of their newsletter. They're not really regular. I think that it looks like the last one was in 2005, so I'm not sure what the state of that is. TESOLers for Social Responsibility also has an email list, but again, you need to be a paying member of TESOL to subscribe to that list. The other three organizations that I'm going to talk about all have a lot of really neat stuff available for free. I'm not sure how to say the next one, but maybe it's IATEFL. It's IATEFL, and that's the International Association of Teachers of English as a Foreign Language. They have a Global Issues Special Interest Group. That's what most organizations term this. Only TESOL has the different name of calling it TESOLers for Social Responsibility. For the rest of the organizations, they always call it the Global Issues Special Interest Group, or SIG. If you go to the website, I'll link to IATEFL's Global Issues Special Interest Group. Their website isn't particularly interesting. They have a materials section that has a couple of web quests, which are kind of neat HTML-based lesson plans. But what's really nice about this organization is that they have a Yahoo group. And I'll provide a link to that too. And in the Yahoo group, you can subscribe to their Yahoo email list. Whether or not you're a member of IATEFL, you can subscribe. So it's worth checking out the IATEFL website to check out if you're interested in any of the other special interest groups. I'm a member of the teacher development one in addition to the global issues one. The teacher development one is kind of interesting. Right now, there's a very active discussion about values in language teaching. Another neat thing that's available at their Yahoo group is they have if you click on the files section, they have a lot of stuff up there. I haven't looked at it in great detail, but they have some articles, they have some collections of links that are relevant, and they have some materials and lesson plans that you can use. A similar setup is Korean TESOL. They have a very new Global Issues Special Interest Group. They also have a Yahoo group with some files available. Their files include lesson plans, links, and other materials. And they also have a newsletter. So far, I think they've only had one, and that was in March of 2007. But the plan is to have a quarterly newsletter, and currently it's available for free to members or non-members, so that's worth checking out. And that email list is also pretty active. I get the daily digest where they condense all of the messages into one email per day, and quite often there's four or five emails per day on that list. Another national organization that has a great, probably in my opinion, the premier Global Issues Special Interest Group is JALT. That's the Japanese Association of Language Teaching, or maybe the Japan Association of Language Teaching. Their Global Issues Special Interest Group has a quarterly newsletter. They've put out something like, 65 editions of the newsletter. They've got a nice website. Unfortunately, you can't view the newer editions of the newsletter online, but they've got a nice website with some of the older archives of articles available for free. And I just found this out today, actually. You can subscribe to their newsletter for $15 per year, whether or not you're a member of JALT, which is really nice. And I'm going to send my check off today, actually. So those are four professional organizations for English teachers that have a Global Issues Special Interest Group of some form or another. And just to sum up, I strongly suggest going to JALT's website and checking out the newsletter archives. And I also strongly suggest for teachers that are interested in Global Issues and language teaching, going to both IATFL and Korean TESOL's Yahoo groups, joining the email list and checking out the files that they have available there. Their websites don't have a lot, but the Yahoo groups are really useful and both are very active. Okay, next I'd like to talk about a blog that's available that a friend of mine emailed to me. It's called No Impact Man, and it's at Blogspot. I'll put a link in the show notes. Basically, this guy and his family are trying to live a no-impact lifestyle for a year. That's a little bit misleading. They started the process of moving towards a no-impact lifestyle a year ago. I think they started in November of 2006. Right now, he just entered the getting off the electric grid phase of his project. I don't know the steps off the top of my head, but it was something like eliminating trash from their life, eliminating plastic from their life, eating in a responsible way, limiting their consumption as much as possible, those kinds of things. So basically, they go through a series of steps to try to get to this no-impact ideal. It's a pretty interesting blog. Unfortunately, the way it's set up, you kind of have to dig through entry by entry to see the specific things that he's actually done. I'm sure that at some point they'll have, a more detailed kind of overview of each step when they took them. But right now, you kind of have to dig through it to find that stuff out. But he has come up with some pretty big sacrifices for them to make. Some of the things seem a little, I don't know. Like, for example, he was talking about how he wanted to, he's a writer. Part of the blog is a little bit self-promotional, right? He's in the process of writing a book, and they're making a documentary about it too. So that might rub some people the wrong way. And he talks at one particular entry. He talks about how, as part of consuming or as part of curbing their consumption, they're not buying anything new except for socks and underwear for a year. Now, that it seemed weird to me on a couple of levels. I mean, first of all, why do you need to buy new socks and new underwear if you're only doing it for a year? I mean, maybe I'm revealing a little bit about myself, but I don't need to buy new socks and new underwear every year. The other thing that was weird is he talked about how he needed notebooks to do his writing. And, you know, as a writer, of course he has a lot of, single-sided paper lying around. And he talks about how he made his own notebooks out of cardboard and this used paper, but that those notebooks sucked, to quote him. And so he found a place in Japan that makes 100% post-consumer recycled notebooks, and he ordered them. And that seems really weird, right, to ship these notebooks from Japan to New York as part of this quote-unquote no-impact lifestyle. So I don't know. Like I said, I haven't really looked at it in great detail, and I don't know exactly what he's done or what he hasn't done. But it's kind of interesting, and certainly I think it could be used to spur some interesting class discussions if your students were able to follow along and to kind of to go through the progress that he's made. Also, maybe the fact that he and his family are coming from a pretty consumer-heavy lifestyle, that might help to engage students more. I mean, for example, there's an entry that his wife made about how difficult it was to give up Starbucks. And I have to admit, that really kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I don't go to Starbucks. I don't really understand the phenomenon. But for a lot of students, maybe they could relate to that. And so that might be, it might provide kind of a gateway into these environmental issues, because like a lot of students, he doesn't have a really strong background in these issues. He's kind of new to it as well. And so maybe they can kind of learn along with him, which might be nice. I don't want to come across too negative, because I really respect what he's doing, and I hope that that a lot of people follow the blog and read the book and make some changes to their own life. So I think that'd be wonderful. And in addition to the stuff that he's doing in his own life, he does a lot, or he's done a lot of internet research, and he has a lot of great links to articles and to other resources, to lists of, 10 things you can do to help the environment. He's got links to a bunch of different lists like that. And so there's a lot of neat stuff to find on that blog. So check it out. I understand that there was a similar thing called Ethical Man, which was a TV show that ran on the BBC. Unfortunately, I can't really tell you any more about it than that, because currently the BBC website is being blocked by the Great Chinese Firewall. It's not always blocked. Sometimes I can use the BBC website, but it goes in and out, and currently I can't get to it. But that seems like an interesting thing. I like the idea of a TV show based on this kind of thing to use in a class. And certainly once this No Impact Man makes a documentary, I'll look into that and see if I think that would be useful for a class. In a way, it reminds me of the stuff that Morgan Spurlock has done. He's the guy that made Super Size Me, which I used in a class before pretty successfully. And he also made the TV show 30 Days, in which it's sort of the same as Super Size Me, except every episode doesn't star him, but someone puts themselves in a different situation for 30 days and then reflects upon the change. There was one that dealt with overconsumption that was really, really disturbing to me in a way, just the attitudes that people had. Anyways, I didn't really have so much success using that in the classroom. One reason is because there's no subtitles. When I show a video in the class, and I don't, in general, like showing movies that much, but when I do, I find it's really helpful to have English subtitles. The Super Size Me DVD is closed captioned, which unfortunately doesn't work on a lot of TVs, but on some TVs I'm able to get subtitles in the form of the closed captioning. Another thing that's kind of neat about the Super Size Me DVD is the one that I have is called Educationally Enhanced. So it's got all these extra features. It's got a bunch of PDFs of activities and worksheets and lesson plans that you can do. It's not, to be honest, I wouldn't really recommend buying it for an English teacher. I got it for Christmas a couple years ago, but it's kind of neat, and it's certainly, it's exciting to think that more movies or TV shows in the future will come out with these kind of educational goals and activities built into them. I think that's a really neat idea. I'd love to hear if anyone has had success using films or TV shows to bring global issues into the classroom, feel free to email me or to visit the website and post it in the forums. The main thing that we've done recently is using the movie Princess Mononoke, which I think I talked about on an earlier podcast, and you can find specific activities that we used on the website as well. Oh, and I want to mention one other website. This is actually someone who I met through the email list for the IATFL Global Issues Special Interest Group. I posted about my website, and she then posted about her school that she's running, and she has a website as well. The website is learnenglishincornwall.co.uk. So that's Learn English in Cornwall with no spaces, no dashes, nothing, .co.uk. And she runs a small English school. It's her house, I assume. And it's an English school / bed and breakfast. And students in groups of 1 to 4 stay with her for a week or for 2 weeks, get a couple hours of English instruction per day. And then she also takes them on excursions and stuff if they want to do that. The thing that's really neat, though, is she's got a very strong environmental ethic behind her school. The food that she serves, because I think dinner is included in the students' tuition, is all local, organic, and I think she mentions being vegetarian, so I think it's probably vegetarian or maybe even vegan. She encourages her students to travel to her school using green methods of travel. She provides organic sheets. And she designed a course for business managers about incorporating green practices into their business. And so she teaches them about all of these global issues, the vocabulary for environmental issues, helps them come up with a business plan to implement these environmental concerns when they go home. And she also puts them in touch with business leaders in her hometown that are doing kind of environmental things. She's check out the website. It's really kind of neat. She's won a bunch of green tourism awards as well. So it's really neat to see what other people are doing out there. And I guess in that vein, if you're doing anything involving, you know, environmental or global issues actions, even outside of the teaching, we'd love to hear about that too. So don't hesitate to share those. One of the things that I think is really neat about that school, it's an example of how when we really integrate global and environmental issues into our lives, they just organically become part of our teaching. I mentioned on the Teaching Development Special Interest Group email list from IATFL, they're having a discussion about how is it appropriate to bring values into language teaching, or is it appropriate, and if it is, how do you do it, what values do you bring, and stuff like that. I'm certainly of the school of thought that every teacher brings values into the classroom. Teaching is a very, well, I don't know, maybe there's another way of doing it. But for me, who I am comes out in my teaching. I don't know how you could do it any other way. And to be honest, I wouldn't want to do it any other way. The values that you hold, I mean, even something simple like don't cheat, don't plagiarize, be quiet when other students are talking. Those are all values. Those are all values of what it means to be a polite person, a good student, that kind of thing. And so when you integrate global issues, values, and environmental values into your life, they will just come out in your teaching. And I don't think it's okay for a teacher to really force their opinions or beliefs on the students, but when it's so much a part of who you are, as it is in the case of Julie, who in her school in Cornwall, you know, these things are going to come up. She's suggesting to students even before they arrive that they be mindful about how they choose to travel. You know, as soon as they get there, they're going to see the food options that are available, and they're going to talk about these things. That will inevitably lead to global issues, and that's if students choose not to talk about those things, that's fine too. But when those things are so much a part of who you are, there's going to be evidence of those values in everything that you do. There's no way I could do this show about online resources without mentioning my favorite investigative journalist. I'm not actually sure how to say his name. I believe it's Mombiot, but it could be Mombiot or something like that. But it's MONBIOT.com. And the thing that I love about this website, his articles are really well researched and very well referenced. So in every article, there's, you know, 10 or 20 footnotes for every fact that he states in his articles. You can look them up, you can find the original statistics or the original source, which is just, it would be wonderful if every journalist did that instead of just cutting and pasting from the AP Newswire or from White House or corporate press reports. He covers a really wide range of stuff, and he does a really nice job of going from abstract and global perspectives to really personal stuff. I'll link to one of my favorite examples of this. He did a really nice piece about starting a community garden plot. You can talk about the benefits of growing your own food from the point of view of, you know, saving fossil fuels for transportation, water and soil pollution that's caused by the overuse of pesticides and fertilizers, that type of thing. But in his article, he gives really specific, you know, step-by-step instructions on how to start this plot. So if you wanted to go out there and plant these same plants, you really could just by reading his article. And I thought that was the blend of real global understanding with very practical down-to-earth advice is really great. I'm not sure how useful his site is in terms of finding readings for students, just because they're kind of difficult. But it's really useful, I find, as a resource to educate myself about issues. Okay, well, that's all I'm going to do for this week. I know in this particular episode, there's a lot of links that I mentioned. So please stop by the website and click on the podcast section. And if you look at show number 8, I'll have all the links typed up for you. So thanks very much for listening. And until next time, bye-bye.